Rise above and choose your own thinking, says my guest today. If he'd like to thank his younger self for doing something, it would be for making lifelong friends. We have a leadership psychologist and author of Survival Psychology, book due out on April 14th. Let's see who we have on the show. Hello and welcome to the Practical Leadership Podcast. I am your host, Paul Morton, and we are talking about leadership, management, and the various lives that surround it. It's my joy, delight, and privilege to bring into my studio some of the smartest, wisest people I've been able to find for your delectation and enjoyment. And I hope that you do get a lot out of the conversations that we have here. When you realize that your management team has grown too fast or you've inherited a new team and the fastest, best lever you have for growth and improvement is attached firmly to those managers, get in touch. I help you run management coaching and training programs that'll make a big difference really quickly. You can find me at the Practical Leadership Academy website and on all the usual social channels. Leadership psychologist, author, accomplished speaker of TED Talks, Tony Brooks, thank you very much for joining me.
Hey, an absolute pleasure, Paul. Looking forward to having a chat today.
Well, that was a very shorthand version of your, obviously, 15-year career there. can you do a more elaborate and fulsome justice where you've come from and how you've managed to get here?
Hey, it's good to keep it simple and summarize, isn't it, though, Paul? Yeah, no, I actually started my business nearly 17 years ago now, and it's changed shape over the years. But I work with heads of companies, leaders, senior leaders within companies, and it's, as I'm a qualified psychologist, and my fascination is in that, it's a lot about the mindset of leaders and how leaders can get over some of the internal difficulties that they're possibly facing, as well as the external ones. So yeah, I do one-to-one work, group work, and I go out speaking on leadership mindset.
That will do. How did you get to where you are then? I mean, you've obviously been through the mill, like your career was a career.
Yeah.
As a psychologist as well as a business person, how did you first become a people manager, for example?
Yeah, well, became a people manager in the 1980s. I started my career in technology, Paul, and then as you do, you start to step up into leadership roles and you know, look after people. And early on in my career, my boss said to me, do you want to go down the management path or do you want to go down the technical path? Because it's important to make the conscious decision. And my fascination lay more in working with people, getting the best out of people. So I took that path probably more so than in the, you know, the early 90s, more officially. Worked at a company called Experian, who were really good, actually, in terms of leadership development. I mean, sometimes I think people step up out of technical roles and they're almost expected to lead people, but they gave me a lot of support. And that's when I started studying psychology through that time and then carried on doing my master's when I had my own business as well, because I think people are all at once wonderful, but can be very challenging. I think getting the best out of ourselves, but getting the best out of other people, then it's helpful to get a greater understanding of what's going on internally with people's thinking and perspectives and what have you.
So it's the thing is, if you want to know other people, you have to start by knowing yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think my fascination with psychology, Paul, probably stemmed through that, really. I mean, I've had my own battles. I had a problem with depression around about 10 years ago, and I think my fascination with psychology, it's initially and still probably, is what makes me tick and how do I improve that. But then it's great to be able to share my own knowledge experiences to help other people, because our own thinking can, you know, in its worst cases completely take us down, you know, and it's such a tragedy, really. And I think that helping people gain greater awareness and understanding of what's going on for them internally and being able to get greater control over that is something I'd like to continue to do and learn more about and help people with, really.
It's a non-stop learning process, really, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, there's, and with the self-talk piece there, I think there's nobody we listen to more than ourselves, our own internal voice. And if we truly knew the power of our thoughts, we'd be very careful about what it is we actually think.
Yeah, and which thoughts we choose to go with. I mean, the research has changed over the years, but allegedly we're having like 5,000 or 6,000 thoughts a day. And a lot of them are doubtful, repetitive, negative. And you can either go with those or you can consciously choose to say, no, actually, I'm going to go down a different path in my thinking. And that's been the greatest realization for me over the years, that you don't have to, you don't have to go with your own internal thinking. It doesn't have to dominate you. It's not your identity. It's just thoughts coming up that you don't need to follow. And that's been one of the most important things that I've learned over the years, is that, you know, it's not you. It doesn't have to be you.
There's an author, a comic called Scott Adams in the US, and he writes that we are moist, programmable robots. And that if we just have to work out what the code is, and that can be feeding us in different things, exercising ourselves in a different way, but speaking to ourselves in a different manner, and just simply naming things that we're presented with.
Yeah, absolutely.
Solid hours.
Mm. Yeah, and I think it's about being your own, as a simple phrase, it's being your best coach, really.
Mm.
So that you can have, we're having internal dialogues or often monologues, but why not make them helpful then? Why not have better conversations within yourself and actually come at things from a more helpful perspective? Be kinder to yourself, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I try to have almost outrageously positive self-talk. You know, like anybody else, it kind of floats all over the place. But moments of outrageously positive is like, why aren't you king of the world? Come on, let's go. You need to be just as... I mean, you can really explode your thinking that way. And it really, I think it's quite a powerful way to find out the answer to almost any problem you have. It's just let your brain answer, give it a space to answer.
Yeah, and it's about tapping into your potential then, isn't it, Paul? I mean, I talk a lot about the internal battle between your potential self and destructive self. Because a lot of this thinking we're talking about is part of your destructive thinking. But we've got amazing potential. Most of us will never realize anything like the potential we have because we're held back. And I think the more you can liberate that without getting into ego too much, I mean, we can, you know, that's a whole other topic. Then the better, really, as you were saying, release some of that potential and that creativity. Give yourself the chance to do that.
Mm. I mean, ego is useful. You know, it's a useful tool. It gets you out, it gets you up, it gets you on stage, you are TED talking there. You needed to lean on your ego to get you out onto the stage. But I think as long as you have a little jam jar that you can, you know, release the winds when you need it and then screw the lid back on again and you keep it stored and you have it under control rather than it having you under control. So
yeah, I don't know. We could talk the whole episode about ego.
I tend
to think about it being about releasing the real me, the me that I'm capable of being, and releasing that potential to grow, mm-hmm. rather than get tapped into. For me, the problem with ego is, and I totally respect that a lot of people think there's a healthy side to ego, and to a degree there is, but I think a lot of the time ego is fixated on our level of importance and how we show up against other people and the competition. And some of that can be really unhealthy.
Yes, please.
So I prefer to think of it as you were saying, you know, when you stand up at a TEDx stage, being the best version of myself and bringing out, you know, the best part of me and what have you. And if you want to call that an element of ego, then I guess it could be in there.
So leading on from that, then, what advice would you give to people leaders?
To first-time people leaders or people who've been leading for a while?
First time.
Yeah, no, okay. I would say two things, really. Think that seek support to help your development, and that can come in all forms, can't it, Paul? It could be picking up books to read, going on webinars. It could be finding people in the organization who can be mentors for you, people who are doing certain things well that you can learn from. More officially, it could be pushing to get training, could be having your own one-to-one support. All of those things, I think, almost be a sponge as a leader and seek knowledge and advice and methods to help you improve. And on the flip side of it, from a psychological point of view, talking to a fairly new leader yesterday, and I was saying, have faith in the fact that you will continue to grow right the way through your journey as a leader. You'll never be perfect. You'll never be the finished article. But by doing some of those things, you know, tapping into support and what have you, know that you can continue to improve and grow and develop through time, and have faith in that, really. Because I think some people get into a leadership role and they, you know, we could talk about imposter syndrome as well. Imposter syndrome might flag up. We're going to be found out. We're not good enough to do it, whatever. You're not expected to be the finished article, and you shouldn't expect yourself to be the finished article, but you're there on potential and what you can do. And like you said then, you can open up your mind to all the things that you can learn and do to improve, then that's a great journey to be on then.
If you stop learning, you start dying.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you don't grow, then a bend by definition. Yeah. Mm. So then leading on from sort of seeking support to help your development, what sort of how-to advice would you then give as first aid for a new manager? How would you put this into practice? What the three-step program to...
Yeah, I mean, in my work, I tend to help leaders become more strategic, which I think is having, rather than fixating on all the stuff we're reacting to, it's about, and your to-do list and what have you, it's having time to stand back and start to look more strategically about what does the bigger picture look like looking into the future. And that classic, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5 year in the future. But what then does that mean? What are the bigger changes that need to be made? So helping leaders be more strategic, and think also then looking at the culture of whether it be your team or your organization, and how are you currently leading your people and what needs to happen to get the best out of your people? Because culture exists in teams and organizations, whether you shape it or not. So it's much more important to consciously make choices about how you're going to shape your culture. And then from an individual perspective, I think work on yourself. And that can be working on your skills and your development. But as we've been touching on, Paul, it's about looking within about what's the quality of your thinking like? How do you view yourself? And what needs work there? And if you're struggling to do that on your own, then get some support unpicking that and working through it, really.
Okay. That's quite a lot to be going on with. But I think it's a good little framework. Lean on. If you had to boil your many years of experience and learning and the pain and suffering and all that down into one thing that you could share with 10,000 people or on 10,000 billboards all around the world, what would that be?
Yeah, it's timely you've asked that question, actually, because I went to see, going off at a slight tangent, Paul, I went to see Bob Marley movie One Love recently, which I really enjoyed, and I've liked him for years.
I like Bob.
But the song Redemption Song has a line in it about emancipate yourself from mental slavery, not ourselves can free our mind, which is a great line. And for me, I think it's about the fact, as we've touched on already, that you can consciously rise above your own thinking. We're allegedly, as human beings, we're a species that is much more capable of observing and watching our own thinking and then choosing our thoughts. It's a gift for us as a superpower, as a human beings, really, that we can do that. So make more use, make greater use of that ability, really. Have those moments of quiet and pauses where you can just say, okay, that's where my thinking's going, but I don't have to go down that rabbit hole with it. If I find a more helpful, positive perspective, outlook, more optimistic outlook, this is where my thinking can go. So it's that, really. You can consciously choose you choose your own thinking. Rise above and choose your own thinking. That would be what I would share with people.
Rise above and choose your own thinking.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that speaks to personal responsibility. That speaks to the second thoughts, the meta of consciousness. Quite profound little statement there.
Yeah, well, I hope so. And I think it's been a big impact on me. I read Eckhart Tolle's book, New Earth, probably about 11 years ago now. And he probably uses things that have come before him, but he talks about that, the concept of the watcher in the book, and that ability to watch and observe your own thinking. And then by watching and observing your own thinking, then you gain greater power, really, because it doesn't have such a strong hold on you the minute you start to move to that place of being the watcher. And that was profoundly impactful on me sort of 10 years ago and stuck with me. And I think through time, that's been the most important thing for me in terms of keeping on top of my own internal thinking, really.
So how does that then feed into the idea of survival thinking? I mean, well, tell us, number one, what you're working on right now.
Yeah. Well, as you touched on, I had a TEDx talk go live last week. So I delivered that in January and it went live on YouTube last week, called Unleashing Your Creativity by Escaping Your Survival Thinking. And then I've got a book called Survival Psychology coming out in April, on April the 11th. And what I talk about is the fact that a lot of this more destructive thinking that we're talking about, Paul, in my opinion, emanates from our survival instinct. Because if you go back to the origins of our species, what they were preoccupied with was physical threats. It would be things like saber-toothed tigers and physical threats. But in modern life, it's more about we go more internal and we start to look for where we're weak or vulnerable and there may be flaws in us. And so our monitoring of the environment is more about looking at threats to us from almost a more psychological perspective. We're worried about our happiness, our practical survival rather than physical survival. And then I sort of, going through that, I've come to a view that there are five manifestations of that, particularly if we talk for leaders as well, which is imposter syndrome, ego, topic you and I were talking about a little while ago, defensive mindset, group behavior, and negative self-talk. And these are the kind of things that can play out for human beings generally, but those five things in particular for people in leadership roles and people stepping up into leadership roles, that's where they can start to come through, really. In my opinion, they're all fed by survival instinct, but they can play out and they can hold people back and they can cause all sorts of problems. And so in my book in particular, because the TEDx talk is obviously 15 minutes and it shares some messages around that, but in the book, for me, it's about people gaining greater understanding about how and why these things are playing out for them. Because through understanding, you can then, again, you can start to gain greater control and make choices and see things differently, Paul.
Okay. We have to go into this a bit more detail. Can you take me through, give me a sentence on each of the five, each of the five, what it means for a leader, what they can do about it. What's the practical thing I can do about, high level, imposter syndrome, let's go with that.
Yeah, I mean, imposter syndrome for me, it's been around since the 70s, the term, but it became really prominent the last few years. And my biggest message really is don't label yourself with a syndrome, because we all have moments where we feel we might be not quite good in it. It might be not even within work life. It could be as a parent, husband, wife, whatever, that we doubt ourselves. And particularly how it shows up for leaders, obviously, if you're stepping up into more and more senior roles, you have this fear that you're going to be found out to be a fraud and that you're not actually who people think you are in that role. So the number one thing is we all do it. You don't have a syndrome, in my opinion, you do not have a syndrome. It's not in, the medical classifications. It's not a thing. Be more realistic that it's just part of, everyday human life that we have those moments where we feel not good enough and doubt ourselves. Then that gives us a better place to deal with it rather than labeling yourself with a syndrome. And there's a number of things I could talk about and I talk about in the book. But I think one of the things I do with leaders, which is quite a struggle for them, is to start to reflect on what are your successes over your journey. What are your strengths? What are your skills? Focus on those, because we tend to focus too much on our flaws and what we, our gaps, what we've not got yet, or the skills we don't have. And pushing people to do that can be a really great thing because it starts to build their confidence. What often is said to me is, God, I never realized I've done so much really, and I've achieved so much over the journey. And yes, there's more to do, but focus more on what you've doing and what you've got rather than what you haven't yet done and what what you don't have, really.
Very good. Ego, we talked about. Offensive mindset.
Yeah, I don't know if any of the listeners have heard of the work of Carol Dweck, who's a renowned psychologist, but she talks a lot about growth and fixed mindset. Why I talk about defensive mindset is that when things like mistakes happen or challenges occur, or we get more critical feedback, often our survival instinct will drive us to go defensive with that. We find feedback threatening, or if a mistake's made, we beat ourselves up, we're really tough on ourselves. And so again, I think that defensive mindset can play out in all sorts of ways around that. And it is about shifting out of that and realizing that our growth comes once we start to embrace feedback, once we start to realize we all make mistakes and we can learn from them. And it's a flipping perspective again to say, gone defensive, but I can get out of that. And often defensiveness will put us into comfort zones as well. It will make us not want to step out and try new things because we'll find it threatening. So realizing you're going defensive, and again, it's quite normal, but then taking steps to move yourself out of that. And I think things like feedback, it's never great to get feedback that says you went wrong there or whatever, but actually you learn from that and you learn and grow. In the book, I share one story about Lee Dixon, who's an ex-footballer. I met on holiday once, but I always remember him being interviewed on telly, and he said that the English football team learned more from their defeats than their victories. And with the England football team, there's been a fair few of those over the years.
I've learned a lot.
But it is about getting into that mindset that says, okay, that didn't work out, but what do we learn from it? How do we make sure we grow and we develop from that? And I think as leaders, that's a really important thing to do.
I think I've certainly learned more from the harsh feedback that I've had than from all the praise. Of course, there's been lots of praise, right? But it's when somebody is actually willing to lean in and say, no, that sucked really badly, and this is why.
Yeah.
Still smart in some cases. I might not think it's entirely justified, but I'm going to learn from it.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah. And there's one, as a tiny reframe that I like, is instead of saying feedback, I prefer to say observation.
Hey, like that.
Yeah. So if you say, I've got some feedback for you, reaction is to shut down and say, I don't want to hear this. And rather than just saying, I've got an observation, as in, I've just watched you do something. Would you like, can I share an observation with you? Yeah, sure. Can I share some feedback with you? No, thank you.
Well, and people have the word appraisal, the word feedback. People have, words have power. I really like that, Paul. I think that's great. I've not thought of it that way before. I think that's a great thing to do, actually. But because I say, some words are quite charged, really, aren't they? Emotionally charged. And feedback is one. Appraisal is definitely another.
Asking people why is quite a difficult one. Rather, ask people what.
Yeah, yeah.
Or how. How did we get to this point? Or what happened? Yeah. What's going on? Help me understand that. Why did you do that?
Yeah.
Here's a bonus. Well,
why are you doing that? I have clients who decide they're going to run marathons. They're going to do another qualification. They want to do an MBA, whatever. And I often ask why, because the problem is sometimes, and this goes into ego a little bit as well, is our ego thinks we need more of this. We need another qualification. We need this. We need the other to elevate ourselves. But often we don't. There was a leader I was talking to yesterday, no qualification, but an absolute wealth of experience and absolutely capable of doing what they do. And good that they realize they don't need to necessarily go off and I'm not saying obviously don't do qualifications because it may well be right for you, but that word why, as you say, Paul, is powerful because
it stops you.
There was a client of mine recently doing a marathon. I went, why? Why are you doing it? Because it's good to challenge ourselves and just think, am I doing it just to prove myself for something? Or is there a really good, valid reason? I say, could well be either or. It's fine. But yeah, like that observation, I'm going to take that away myself. Well, that's a good one.
Well, I mean, it took me a long, long time to work out that the reason for doing, you observe yourself, observe your own actions, the reason I was doing many, many things was I was desperately seeking approbation, desperately seeking approval from random people. And realistically, when I talk to my kids now, and I've got a 10 and a 12-year-old, the list of people that I genuinely want to seek approval from is very small. It includes my mum. That's about it, really. My wife, my kids, God. That's a list. It's a short list, but a meaningful one. The rest of the world can go hang.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I think it's the most important person to focus on is your own self-approval, really.
Yeah.
And I had a big decision to make over the last few days and went a particular way. And I look to be guided by my own values, definitely rather than ego again, Paul.
Yeah.
And it was good. And I came to a decision and that was fine. And my mum and dad, my dad passed a long time ago, but I still have conversations with him though. And I think still, look for my mum and dad's approval, even though they're not physically with me. So I can get that a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think so. But I think going within and looking for yourself to approve of what you're doing first, because that's all part of that journey of liking, loving yourself, being happy with yourself.
So when you had the big decision to make there, and you still put the shirt on. Those of you listening in black and white.
Great shirt.
It's magnificent. I'm having shirt envy. I tend to wear the white jobs just for the professionals.
Hello.
I love it. Is there a book other than, of course, your own book, when the title of is which?
It's called Survival Psychology.
Survival Psychology. Link is in the description of this episode. You can get it on all the usual suspect places, I'm sure. Is there a book that you recommend or you gift more than any other?
I guess the book that I've already touched on, which is most impactful for me, was New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. And that is the one that I would, if something, as a book that I know is slightly cliche, but almost life-changing, then that was the one that is so impactful for me. I think that it's not necessarily a book for everybody. There is I wouldn't say deeply spiritual side to it, but there's an element of spirituality in the book as well, because he's that kind of speaker and author, really. But it's a fascinating delve into the human psyche. And I think anybody would find it an interesting read.
Is there something you'd like to thank your younger self for doing?
Ooh, thank my younger self. I think actually, I've still got some really good friends from school. You and I were talking about celebrating big birthdays earlier, weren't we, Paul? And had some of my old school friends at my 60th birthday celebration not long ago. And I think what I would thank my younger self for was making some great lifelong friends.
Yeah.
Because it can be a lonely journey sometimes, life, can't it? And I think having people in my business network who've become friends as well, brilliant. But if I go right back to my younger self, I made some really great friends at school and university and whatever that I'm really pleased to say that, still connected with.
That's superb. That's superb. Just before we wrap up, how would you like to be remembered?
How would I like to be remembered? I think a few things, really. I think somebody with a good heart. Funnily enough as well, somebody who was honest and always did what they said they were going to do. So I think a lot of people don't, and I don't always 100% do that. I strive to do that very much. And I think somebody who brought some, changed some people's ways of thinking, had an impact on people by just changing their outlook on life or the way that they looked at life or themselves would be a great thing.
And very lastly, how can people find you?
Yeah, so two simple things, really, Paul. I've got a company website, but I've got my own personal website called thetonybrooks.com, and that's Brooks without an E, so TONYBROOKS. But better on LinkedIn, really, where I'm there as Tony Brooks as a leadership psychologist. It'd be great to connect with people. And if it's triggered any thoughts today, our conversation, Paul, then it'd be great to hear people's thoughts on that. Or if they've got any questions, that would be brilliant.
Marvellous. Tony Brooks, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
And thank you for inviting me along, Paul.
And that's a wrap. I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you for joining me. If there's ever anything I can do to help you on your journey, then do please reach out. You can find me on LinkedIn and all the usual sources. Do please subscribe, leave me your 5-star review, and most importantly, get in touch with your comments and feedback. It's really how I grow, and that's what I'm doing this for. Thanks again.